We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Sunday Times' A Life in the Day column. It features the sculptor Anish Kapoor and it's read by Harriet Cass.
2 evenings a week I sit with my Zen meditation group, but I also need a period of mindlessness, so I turn on the television and watch Newsnight until 11.
Thanks to Giles Bancroft for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Krishnan and Guru Murphy. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Linda Smith. Jeremy, the traditional easiest question. Who's being accused of getting sexed up even after some Horlicks?
Oh, that's Ali Campbell, who is the government's chief. Well, he used to be press officer, and now he's just sort of Goebbels in chief. And Straw said that the report which Campbell put together, which was called What I Did in My School Holidays, and was about Iraq. Well, you see, the thing is, he plagiarised it, but didn't accredit it. And so that doesn't count, does it? He nicked it, but then altered it. So that's just research, surely. Because whereas it said things like Saddam Hussein supports opposition groups in other countries, that became supports terrorist groups in other countries. Where it said Saddam has a moustache, it became has a magic wand that can turn sand into laser weapons. And so on. But your man Campbell, who likes to be a bit macho and a bit of a tasty geezer, he said, well, they might say it's a Horlicks up in effete Blackburn, but down in Burnley they would say it was a storm in a teacup. Now, I was in Lancashire recently, and I wouldn't really be touting Burnley as a seat of rationality. Given,
I went to school
given...
in Blackburn, and I grew up in Burnley.
Well, you know that.
So, yeah, I do know.
How come you haven't got a proper Lancashire accent, then?
Good school.
You go all pot... You mean good as in here's money, take my child's accent away?
Yes, exactly.
Not good as in teacher stuff.
No.
Make you posh so
just
you can
make
go
me
on the
sound
telly.
Posh so I can go on the telly, yeah.
No, you see, you've been tricked, you've been duped. You're all posh, and all you can do is the news.
I know.
Otherwise, you could do pop programmes and youth TV. You could sit around on beanbags on a Saturday morning, proper TV. See, right, it's Krishnan, and we've got some top stuff coming up now. Have a wait. Yes.
What do you think we've got left to say? Nothing. Except I know Alastair Campbell wants the BBC to apologise, so I'd like to say I'm sorry. I hope the bastard shuts up now.
Alastair Campbell has denied claims he sexed up the dodgy dossier about the Iraq's alleged weapons of mass destruction. He said there was no way he'd sexed it up, screwed it up perhaps, but sexed it up, no. Alastair Campbell is Tony Blair's press secretary. Secretary because he does whatever Tony wants him to do, and press because that's what he does to the backs of journalists' heads as they're bent over a tubful of water filled with piranhas. Krishnan, why has it all changed down on the farm?
This is something to do with how much money Europe spends on caps.
Mm-hmm.
Caps? Oh, sorry.
Contraceptives. apparently, Europe spends $50 billion a year on contraceptives. And they've reformed, this is called the cap, and, yeah. And they've reformed the cap so that they're not going to give as much money out as they used to.
Just to stop farmers making their animals pregnant.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's the Common Agricultural Policy, of course, which is cap, and which is basically a way for us all to pay farmers to exist and produce butter and wine, and meat that nobody wants, and it floods the market in the developing world and drives farmers out of business, and we're still going to pay just as much for it as we always have been, but the farmers are going to get slightly less. So where it's going, I don't know.
It was quite a boring report, but there was one bit that caught my eye, which said that they'd had to concede to 5 French demands, which sounded like quite a good night out.
The European Union started in good faith as a way of cheering Germany up, because they were feeling left out of the celebrations about them having lost the war. You know, and then it just became this bizarre experiment to see what happens when you put a lot of butter in the sea. But, yeah. So we're going to give the farmers a bit less?
We're going to give the farmers a bit less, and Britain is actually going to just sack all its farmers because it's decided that most farms are museums, and so they're going to go out of business.
They're really not museums. You can walk into a museum for nothing. You're on farmland, you get shot through the head.
This week saw the long-awaited reform of Europe's common agricultural policy. In the 1970s, CAP was famed for causing Europe's famous food mountains, which have gradually diminished following a series of visits by John Prescott. 2 points to Christian and Linda. How did the world's most wanted man get close to the world's most eligible bachelor?
Well, this is your man, Aaron Barczyk, is it?
Barczyk.
It doesn't matter. We won't need to remember it. But but anyway, he got into Windsor Castle. He got into the party, and he got up on stage, and he made a speech, and he snogged Prince William. And the terrible thing is, he could easily have been a terrorist, and that would have been a disaster. King Edward the Ninth, the only one who wasn't there. He'd be like Caligula, wouldn't he? Forcing us to watch endless reruns of It's a Royal Knockout. Why, but it's hilarious. Oh, again? Yes, let's watch it again, shall we? You can't see it too many times, can you?
Did you hear when the Queen saw this man in a pink dress and a beard dressed as Osama bin Laden go up and snog Prince William and give a speech, she said, "Oh, that'll be Harry."
They're going to send in the SAS and say, "Right, see what you can do, chaps." And they're going to clamp down on people with a royal fixation, which is about...
Jenny Bond. That's
Jenny
her
Bond. Nicholas Witchell. They raid Nicholas Witchell's flat. What do you think is in there? Loads and loads of magazines, pictures all over the walls, crowns, Jubilee mugs.
Aaron Barczyk, a self-styled comedy terrorist, astounded security services by gate-crashing Prince William's 21st birthday party. After his arrest, the comic complained police treated him like a KGB agent. They drove him down the Mall in an open-top carriage with the horse guards, forced him to eat a 13-course dinner at Buckingham Palace, and gave him a trip to Edinburgh. Alan, listen to this.
I've travelled the world to learn I must return from Russia with love.
Alan, who's been Putin about this week?
You just did the best available joke on that for the whole thing. I mean, it's this...
Well, you can have the points and we'll move on, if you like.
Right. Well, there's some amazing trade deal. We're going to buy all their gas. I mean, we know what the answer is. It's Vladimir Putin, that Vlad the Impaler is here. But the extraordinary thing was seeing him standing next to Prince Michael of Kent. Absolutely ashen-faced, because Prince Michael of Kent is a Romanov. And Putin was introduced to him, and these tiny eyes glazed over. I have nothing else to say about that, but I thought it was a bit unsettling.
It's interesting that peace has broken out between ourselves and Russia, and everyone says, well, that's fair enough, it's to do with oil. But you try and explain that war is to do with oil, and people glaze over, don't they? My point exactly.
Is Vladimir Putin's state visit to Great Britain the first by a Russian leader since Tsar Alexander II 129 years ago? The trip got off to an embarrassing start when the president's plane had to be diverted to Birmingham, with the result that Mr. Putin spent his first 4 hours in the United Kingdom thinking he was in Chechnya. We start round two with a cutting from the Financial Times.
A Romanian, Victor Dodoi, 45, plans to complain to consumer authorities about the poor quality of a rope he used in a failed attempt to hang himself. He said, "You can't even die in this country."
Thanks to George Georgiou of Nicosia, Cyprus, for sending that in. Jeremy, who's hoping to paint the inner cities blue?
Oh, this is Oliver Letwin. Now, the Tories call him Oliver Left-Wing. An example of how progressive and humanitarian Oliver Letwin really is that he thinks all refugees should be forced to apply in the countries that they are desperately trying to escape by night from the secret police, which is a bit like saying that, you know, the people in the Great Escape shouldn't have started that tunnel without planning permission.
your plans have been a major threat to drainage, Tommy. But this is the Tories' idea of a progressive, Oliver Letwin. And he says he wants to solve the problems of the inner city, but he hasn't really said how. He said neighbourliness will do it. I don't suppose he's ever lived on a council estate, but if you ever do live on a council estate, the people who break into you are your neighbours. But they want to cure the ills of society by just making us be more neighbourly, and we'll all sit on porch swings, and our neighbours will have made slightly too much lunch and invite us round to finish it, and then they will murder us. And nick our videos. There's no idea there at all.
Well, it's all right.
I think you're wrong, though, Jeremy. I do think you're wrong saying it's not an idea that they've got. It is an idea. It's this idea that there was once this golden age when everyone was lovely and there was no crime and you could just walk in and out of people's houses. It's the sort of thing, sometimes older people have that idea, don't they? That, oh, you know, you could leave your doors open. You think, well, you could leave your doors open because you didn't have anything to nick, that's why. Like, my nan used to go on like that, and I said, oh, yeah, could you imagine in the 50s some career criminal sneaking into your scullery and dragging out the mangle? Having it resprayed. Selling it in Amsterdam.
It's the latest cunning wheeze from Shadow Home Secretary Oliver Letwin, who's announced plans to rebuild support for the Conservative Party in the inner cities. Mr. Letwin said he wanted to create a strong neighbourly society, immediately interpreted by Londoners as a society of people you don't know, have no wish to know, and who you might have nodded to once in a newsagent's, but that's as far as it's going. Krishnan, what's the brand new word on the street, according to Collins Dictionary?
Well, aren't there lots of new words on the street? There's about 5,000 new words on the street, according to the new Collins Dictionary, and there's lots of strange ones in there. If, for example, I was trying to...
If I were trying to. Sorry, but you do read the
did
news.
Did I say I went to a good school as well, didn't I? Yeah. If I were trying to make love to Linda, in the old-fashioned sense of the world, I would call her Bootylicious, which is apparently one of the new...
You might call her Shagtastic, which is in as well. I was very upset to find Meldrew in there. I thought at least they'd come up with Corum. Meldrew apparently means a curmudgeonly old fart. I thought I'd missed my chance there. Next time they bring the dictionary out, I'll be dead. Corum will mean a stiff. But Shagtastic actually was there.
It's a wonderful word.
And weblish, apparently, is a new word, which is all these new funny text words that we do, like be right back, BRB, or sleek, sod off, you pretentious git.
It's the latest edition of the Collins English Dictionary. It includes words and phrases such as regime change, Quidditch, weblish, and roadmap. Al-Qaeda is in the new dictionary, so for the first time ever, Americans might be able to find it. Linda, listen to this.
When you hold a brand new baby, you need tender hands to guide them on their way. Hey, hey. You need hands to thank the Lord for leaving and forgiving us. This day,
let's dance for the ladies and gentlemen.
Was that Eminem?
Linda, why are the government insisting that drivers will need both their hands?
Oh, this is this new law, isn't it, that's going to come in about using mobile phones in cars. Now, I personally don't use the field telephone or drive, so... doesn't really affect me, but apparently driving at 90 miles an hour down the motorway while screaming into the telephone is not the aid to road safety that you might think it is.
How else are you supposed to let the pizza delivery boy know where you are on the M25?
The thing about mobile phones that they've skewed all the crime figures, because the 100,000 that were supposed to have been stolen last year weren't stolen, they were thrown away by their owners. Because if you have a mobile phone and it's nicked, you can go to any phone car warehouse and they give you a new one upgraded. Which is ridiculous, so we don't know how many were nicked. I don't know why they don't have a rare telephone like mine. It's on a cable that plugs into the wall. You try and nick that, you take the house with you. Of course, using it in the car's a bit tricky. You've got to park in the hall, but I...
Alan's one of those people who thinks if you speak loudly and clearly, you shouldn't need to use a phone at all.
From December, motorists using mobile phones while driving will face on-the-spot fines of £30. The Road Safety Minister, David Jamieson, said, missing a call won't kill you. Unless the call says, don't for God's sake use the A3, 100-foot-tall radioactive mutated dinosaur is marching towards Guildford. Alan, why is it advisable, and I quote from the Bard, to power nap, perchance to dream?
If you can't sleep at night, you don't worry about it. Because if you take 10 minutes in the middle of the afternoon, it's just as good. It's exactly the same as sex. I mean, you have to do it all night. 10 minutes in the afternoon puts the roses in your cheeks, as we say. But a brief nod, 40 winks, 20 winks, are wonderful for you.
I think the best thing for insomnia is... Because you notice that no matter how hard it is to get to sleep at night, you always want to go to sleep once the alarm goes off. So you should, you know, no matter, you know, being, oh, awake all night, alarm goes off, oh, 5 more minutes. So what you should do is set your alarm for 5 minutes after you go to bed. 8 hours refreshing sleep.
Because when you reach a certain age, when the alarm goes off, you want to pee. And we have to...
Mrs. Corran's rigged up for
me. No, it's something... something that Mrs. Pavlov has rigged up for me.
It's really, a horrible really twist tricky. On the tease made.
If you don't... It's very sad, this thing. When we got this tease made, which is some time ago, it had a picture of a child on the front. It had a plastic thing next to the clock. And you're supposed to put your own child there. So when you wake up in the morning, you see your child and there's the tea. And we never got around to it. We got somebody else's child. It's been there 20 years. Probably extremely old by now with its own prostate problems. But the really good thing about it, though, it has an integral tray. After you turn and put the tea in, when you lock it off again so that the vacuum works, you have a little tray. Which things fall off in the night and the alarm. And when you're...
Yeah, when your domestic arrangements are sounding more and more like Wallace and Gromit.
Alan, you know when you're asleep and then you find you're naked upstairs on a bus, that's a dream.
New research shows that a 60 to 90 minute siesta can be as refreshing as a whole night's sleep. Margaret Thatcher famously slept for only a few hours a night, upside down and hanging from the ceiling. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Daily Telegraph.
An American colonel accused of proposing marriage to as many as 50 women is being investigated by the US Army. In some of his emails, he claimed that he was 6'5" tall. He later revised that claim, explaining he'd shrunk after making too many parachute jumps.
Thanks to Jim Taggart for that. Jeremy, your music.
Chalk dust! Everyone could see that there was chalk dust!
Awfully sorry, but the ball was out. I'd be jolly grateful if you didn't shout. If you don't like it here, well, you shouldn't come. Frankly, sir, you're a pain in the butt.
Jeremy, whose foul-mouthed racket made him balls up this week?
I quite like this Mountie now, because we haven't got anybody who's decent at sport in this country. And I hate tennis fans anyway. I mean, it's all those people in the centre court going, come on, Tim, come on, fall down and hurt yourself, you dreadful foreigner. But your Mountie man there, who's got some tenuous connection to the fact that, you know, the letter A appears in Britain and Canada. And he did use the W word, which is peculiarly English, so that suggests a bit of cultural knowledge of our language, which is good, because I don't think they say it in Canada much.
But he only got fined £1,600 for this. I mean, I would pay £1,600 to say f*** on the BBC.
I think he's right. All those umpires, I mean, they sit up on that. Has anyone ever seen them climb that ladder, or are they carried?
Is
did like a fire engine pull up and leave that thing there. And they all sit up there sort of tuning pianos all day and saying, what's happening? Who's that man? Why is he wearing shorts? Why is there a net on? What? Out? And they don't know what's going on. They don't understand anything. And then they get these poor orphan children. Pull them out of chimneys, clean them up, make them stand there so that Tin Henman can hit balls at them. I liked it in the old days when they had Ilina Stasi and people like that, and you could hear every foul word that was used on the court. They didn't need microphones. And they had those wooden bats made with catgut and leather tennis balls they had. And the women wore dresses, and they all just looked like they were dressed by the Taliban. The men wore long leather breeches and Elizabethan beekeeping masks.
During his second round defeat at Wimbledon, Greg Rosetsky unleashed a foul-mouthed tirade against the umpire. Rosetsky started Wimbledon as the great British hope and ended as a Canadian. He lost his concentration after a spectator called out during a vital rally. The spectator, later identified as one D. Blunkett, explained it was a genuine mistake and nothing to do with this crackdown on Canadian and asylum seekers. Krishnan, why could every sock soon have a silver lining?
Smelly feet.
Smelly feet.
Smelly feet. As we know, when we walked in, Alan is not wearing socks today. And he's wearing rather fetching deck shoes.
They made that noise that the blind date audience makes when someone's got a CSE. And I believe, Greg, you know how to use a spoon, don't you? I've got sandals on me. What do sandals make?
Prizes. No, no. That's points. Points. No, anyway, that problem is Alan's got smelly feet and Jeremy hasn't. And so,
What?
If he wanted to get rid of his smelly feet, scientists in Seoul, appropriately enough, have have discovered that you can make a fabric with silver running through it, and the silver kills all the smells and all the bacteria that cause all the smells, and you no longer have smelly feet.
Or you can use the silver to change for money and buy soap.
South Korean nanotechnologists have discovered a method of impregnating silver particles into clothing, giving it antibacterial properties and putting an end to smelly socks. Silver socks prevent nasty smells and also provide protection against werewolves, though people planning to meet Michael Howard should also take garlic and crucifixes as well. Linda, what new software can find the bull in Bush, not to mention the bull in Blair and Brown?
Bullfighter.
Yes.
This is Bullfighter, this new computer program that can sift out stupid language and over-elaborate bull, really. That's in, people's speeches, politicians' speeches, and it just sifts out all the extraneous words, except that it's invented by some management consultants, so he'd wipe them out completely, wouldn't it? Because the management consultant himself makes no sense whatsoever. So they tried out this software on the Prime Minister. He had quite a lot of these verbiage, and they tried it on Gordon Brown, and it went off the scale. And then they tried it on an EC agricultural commissioner, and the computer crashed.
Bullfighter is a piece of software that sifts the bull from business jargon and exposes empty rhetoric. The software gave a speech from Tony Blair the thumbs up, but a speech from Gordon Brown the thumbs down, and responded to a speech by George W. Bush with the message, "Wowie Moore, it's a talking monkey." Alan, for whom were no nudes, bad nudes?
Oh, I'm very sorry for this bloke. It was at Sadler's Wells, and he bought a leaflet, and he said, and the leaflet said, "Come and watch these naked people dance. Watch them do the splits." Enormous fun, especially with the men. And he turned up, and he went in, and they all had their kit on. And so he took the dance company to the Advertising Standards Authority and said, I came there in my raincoat, and I was hoping to see naked people all over the stage, and they weren't there, and the Advertising Standards Authority found in his favour. And now they're going to give a special nude performance just for him at Sadler's Wells.
People are going to start ringing up consumer programs saying, I bought this shower gel in good faith, getting into the shower only to find there was no nubile woman in there.
An anonymous theatre-goer was appalled to find that a performance at Sadler's Wells featured no nudity, despite the fact that the poster showed a naked male and female dancer. He's had his complaint upheld. It's now been taken up with the poster's designer, a Mr. Alistair Campbell. Before we reveal the exciting final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
This was sent in by Rolo Tompkins of Durley in Hampshire. It's the obituary of Brigadier Sir Gregor MacGregor of MacGregor. A good horseman, MacGregor was once passing in front of the band when his mount noisily broke wind. Sorry about that, brigade of drums, he called out. That's all right, sir, a piper retorted. We thought it was the horse.
Krishnan.
This is with thanks to Richard Senior, who has sent in a letter received from the Department of Social Services in Greenville, South Carolina. It says, Dear sir, your food stamps will be stopped effective March 1992 because we received notice that you passed away. May God bless you. You may reapply if there's a change in your circumstances.
Linda.
This was sent in by Peter McWilliam in Leeds, and it's from Explore Sri Lanka. These are the rules from the Taprobane Elephant Polo Club. Rule one, no elephant may lie down in front of the goal mouth. Two, sugarcane, bananas, rice balls packed with vitamins shall be given to the elephants at the end of each match, and a cold beer or soft drink to the elephant drivers, but not vice versa. In a dispute, the umpire shall determine a player's sex.
Well, I spotted this in Tuesday's Daily Mirror, Simon. It's quite like. A robber armed with a gun demanded cash at a Burger King restaurant in Ypsilanti, Michigan. But the assistant said he couldn't open the cash register without a food order. All right, give me some onion rings, said the robber. Sorry, said the assistant, they're off. Okay, make it a cheeseburger, said the robber. The assistant said, is that with high-fiber bun, low-cal bun, wheat-free bun, whole grain, toasted white, or... The robber fled.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. Jeremy and Christian have 15 points. Linda and Alan shaded ahead to win this week with 17 points. Before we leave you, here's an item from the Swanage Advertiser letters page.
On March the 23rd at 6:15 in the evening, on the beach near the Molem Centre, two pretty girls stripped off to their thongs and ran into the sea, where they frolicked for several minutes. Through the pages of your paper, my wife and I would like to thank them. Yours, the Reverend Ron Wood, Swanage.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Krishnan Gurumurthy, Linda Smith and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and Dave Cohen. And the producer was Simon Nichols.